Good morning.
Good
morning. Welcome to church this morning. My name is Eric Johnson, and I serve as the head of the worship committee, the volunteer sucker for that one. And I'm also on the religious education committee and one of the teachers coming up here. I've been a member for about 2 years now, and the pulpit we have Chad Keller, a doctor or just Chad Keller?
Chad's fine.
Okay. You were invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, just through these doors behind me. If you are a newcomer here this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and hope that if this is your first time to visit, you will consider entering your name on one of the visitor cards that can be found in the back of your hymnal and placing the card in the offering plate or handing it to an usher. If you'll do that, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about all the programs and activities going on here at the church. If you'd like to learn more about the church and about Unitarian Universalism, please visit the information displays in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you are certainly welcome to take home with you. And now I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet.
Good to see you again. I'm so glad you're doing this. I'm so excited.
I draw your attention to the announcements in your order of service. We hope that you'll keep these things in mind as you plan your upcoming week. Also want to encourage, highly encourage, if you can at all possible, to join the choir and to enjoy that. Choir rehearsals begin Thursday, August 4th, so coming up here this Thursday. Rehearsals are held the first three Thursday evenings each month from 7 to 8:30 here at the church. So it's going to be exciting and wonderful. One of the things we're trying to do is really up our music in worship services this year. So we've got a big push towards that, and Jan Allen is heading that up, so I really appreciate that. So please, please, we encourage you to join the choir. I invite you to move to the microphone. Oh, actually, before we do that, a lot of people are gone today because they're off camping. So they're going to, I'm sure, listen to the service later on the internet. So I would like to say good morning to all those who are camping who will be listening later. So if you could all say, good morning, campers. Okay, they'll get a thrill out of that, I'm sure. I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any joys, milestones, or concerns that you may bring with you to church this morning.
About a year ago, over a year ago, my niece Beth had a double lung transplant. She just had her 1 year anniversary. After the first 3 weeks after the transplant, those 3 weeks were terrible, terrible, because they clipped a lymph node. But after those 3 weeks, she's had a really good year of her first year. So I guess that's my joy, is that it was smooth sailing after those terrible 3 weeks.
We'll now have our prelude, and I will attempt to light the chalice. Last time it didn't go very well, so I'll try to do that. Oh, we have
an announcement.
Announcement.
Maybe this is a joy. Maybe it's just a business announcement. But 7 serious Unitarian souls diligently worked yesterday morning until afternoon, and the grounds and some of the physical plant and the gardens look real good. I would like to call out those 7 folks. They include Brenda McCoy, Andy Russo, Lorna McAhone, Gail Borman, and Mary and Jerry Johnson. And they did a terrific job, and we had so much fun. And we found so many more things to do that we're going to have another one. We're not going to wait so long. Maybe another 5-6 weeks. So I wanted to say thank you to all those folks and let the rest of you know you're really missing out. You should come out, because it normally rains those days. We have a wonderful time. Thank you.
Now we have our prelude and lighting. Hope is not pretending that troubles don't exist. It is the trust that they will not last forever, that hurts will be healed and difficulties overcome. It is a faith that a source of strength and renewal lies within to lead us through the dark into the light. By Elizabeth. Now, if you would join us in singing hymn number 179, Words That We Hold Tight. Please rise as you are able. If you would join us in reading 697 in your hymnal for a unison reading. The love and the work of friends and lovers belong to the task and are its health. Rest and rejoicing belong to the task and are its grace. Let tomorrow come tomorrow. Not by your will is the house carried through the night. We've been greatly blessed. Now let us give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of the church. The morning's offering will now be given and received. Thank you.
Hopefully you can hear me. Can you hear? Okay. I have one reading for us, and it actually comes from the book. While I don't own the actual Bible, I have this book called The Poisonwood Bible. And has anybody read this? Okay, so a couple of people have. And I first read it, I think, probably 10, 11, 12 years ago. And I'm one of those people that if there is a book or a song or a movie that, like, touches me, I get obsessed with it, and I keep, like, reading it and listening to it and watching it over and over and over again. And this was a book that, after I finished it, I would have it on my shelf and randomly just at times read the final two paragraphs. And the first time I read it, it made me cry. And then at various times since that time, I can still read it and it can still evoke emotion from me. And so, since the majority of people have not read this book, it takes place in the late 1950s in the Congo about a missionary family that came from Georgia, is living in the Congo, and each of the chapters rotates from being told from the perspective of either the mother or one of the four daughters. It's never told from the perspective of the kind of crazy, zealous missionary husband. And so while they are living in the Congo, one of the daughters, the youngest daughter, Ruth May, has died. And this chapter is actually told from her perspective. And so to just kind of set it up, the mother is walking with her three remaining daughters into a village, and this is what they see. Ahead of them, a small boy, hunched with a radio to his ears, is dancing down the street. He is the size of Ruth May, the daughter who has died, when last seen alive. Orleana, the mother, watches the back of his knees bending in the way of little children, and she begins once more. How many times must a mother do this? Begins to work out how old I would be if still alive. But this time will be the last. This time, before your mind can calculate the answer, it will wander away down the street with the child, dancing to the African music that has gone away and come home changed. The wooden animal in your pocket, mother, will soothe your fingers, which are simply looking for something to touch. Mother, you can still hold on, but forgive. Forgive and give for long as we both shall live. I forgive you, mother. The teeth at your bones are your own. The hunger is yours. Forgiveness is yours. The sins of the fathers belong to you and to the forest and even to the ones in iron bracelets, and here you stand remembering their songs. Listen, slide the weight from your shoulders and move forward. You are afraid you might forget, but you never will. You will forgive and remember. Think of the vine that curls from the small square plot that was once my heart. That is the only marker you need. Move on. Walk forward into the light. Let's pray. Spirit of community, in which we share and find strength and common purpose, we turn our minds and hearts towards one another. We turn our minds and hearts towards one another, seeking to bring into our circle of concern all who need our love and support. Those who are ill, those who are in pain, either in body or in spirit. Those who are lonely, those who have been wronged. We are part of a web of life that makes us one with all humanity. One with all the universe. We are grateful for the miracle of consciousness that we share, the consciousness that gives us the power to remember, to love, and to care. When I was approached to talk today, I was a bit uncertain as to what I would actually speak about. In all honesty, when I received the email about talking today, it was in the middle of May. Classes had just let out. I work at Lewis and Clark. And I was sitting on the couch watching Young and the Restless and thought, sure, I can do this, okay? Now, even though I was a bit apprehensive about speaking in front of you, I thought it would also give me a way to give back to the church. I've been a member here, I think I've been attending for 4 years, and then I joined a year later. And so after the dust settled and it was agreed upon that I would talk at some point during the summer, the question then was, what am I actually going to talk about? So I was sending some emails back and forth with Eric, and we were talking about what interests me. And eventually through those correspondences, this idea of forgiveness was brought up. Professionally speaking, as a therapist, I love working with people that are dealing with forgiveness issues and then people that are dealing with relationship issues, which often those go hand in hand. And I shared some comment that I find forgiveness to be such a fascinating concept, since we often talk about forgiveness in this straightforward, as being the straightforward, direct process. I was raised in a Catholic church. I have an uncle that is a retired priest. My mom was going to be a nun. The convent closed, and that's why I'm here today. But just in case you were wondering how that all worked out. So I attended Catholic school, so we of course would hear the Lord's. I think we used to go every day for a while, and then of course every weekend with my family I would go. And of course forgiveness was always brought up with the Lord's Prayer, which is said each time at Mass. And so kind of the take-home message that I was raised with was, someone wrongs you, they may or may not say, I am sorry, but regardless of if they say it or not, you are to say, I forgive you. And this idea, of course, like I said, is reflected in the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who have trespassed against us. It sounds so easy. The words are so easy to say. But is it so easy to do? And now, of course, in considering this topic of forgiveness, I stepped back and thought, well, why am I so fascinated by this topic? And fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you feel, I tend to be one of those people that think there's usually a deeper meaning behind everything, okay? And so if I look back, I remember that probably all along I've had questions or issues about what forgiveness is and what it isn't. But I think when I first started to consciously become aware of it was several years ago. And my first experience several years ago of kind of consciously recognizing this was tied to, it wasn't, like I say here, it wasn't tied to reading some great novel. It wasn't tied to listening to some conversation on NPR. But it was tied to watching an episode of Grey's Anatomy. And for those of you, some of you know what Grey's Anatomy is, some of you don't, but those of you not familiar with the show, it's a television drama, some might say it's a soap opera, about slightly maladjusted doctors working at a hospital in Seattle. And in this particular episode, the character of George, who was married, had sex with another woman. His wife, Callie, at that time, upon learning this from George, was angry, but almost quickly said, I forgive you. George, of course, was surprised by how quickly she forgave him. And he questioned her about her quick response. And she said something to the effect, and I was gonna go back and rewatch the episode, but I thought it really wasn't that important because the message that I heard from what she said was, that's what we do. We forgive people. And it was after watching that episode that it dawned on me that one of the reasons that I've been so fascinated by forgiveness is that often in life it seems like forgiveness is what we are expected to do. Which, don't get me wrong, doing what is expected of you definitely has its time and its place. But I also feel like doing what is expected of you can sometimes hurt you while benefiting the people around you because it makes them feel better, it makes them feel comfortable. So I think there's a fine line there. And so there was that experience, and then several months later, I had a second experience, and this one came as I was working with, I also work as a therapist, and I was working with a client. And she was in her mid-20s. She was telling me about an experience in her teens in which her father and mother both made choices in which they essentially abandoned her. They told her they were going someplace, but then they just never came back for months upon months. And so eventually she needed to start living on the streets because she didn't have any money, she couldn't stay in their house anymore. And it was during this time of living on the streets that she was raped. And she was angry at her parents as her mother eventually returned, although her father never did. However, besides being angry at her parents for leaving, she was also angry at herself and beating herself up because she couldn't forgive them for leaving. She felt like she should forgive them, but she couldn't do it. Now, the client was raised in a Christian background, which while the client no longer attended services, her mother and various family members did, okay? And at this point, her mother was back in her life. And I remember asking something to the effect, to the effect of why was it so important to forgive her parents? And her response acknowledged that it was something she knew the church valued and something that she had been taught, it's not good to carry that all around with you. And honestly, when I was sitting in that room with the client, I actually did think of that episode of Grey's Anatomy, which our minds do sometimes wonder. But it was that she said that, and I was all of a sudden, it kind of clicked in my mind that episode of that is what is expected to do. You know, and that was what she was taught. It was kind of coming from the church, is that that's what you do. You forgive people. And I remember thinking with this particular client, what was she actually forgiving her parents for? And I don't think she really knew that at that time. Was she forgiving them for walking out at her, for walking out on her at age 16? Was she forgiving them for putting her in a situation that indirectly led to her living on the streets, being raped? Was she forgiving them for all of the various fumbles that her parents had during her childhood and subsequent adult life? And in considering my work with this client and my reactions that I was having, I became aware of another layer of this idea of forgiveness that I've struggled with, and that is the idea that it's been presented that if you don't forgive, it is somehow a reflection of a deficit within you and your heart. And even in our own hymnal, I was looking at various words, I think, for the responsive reading, and that idea came out that forgiveness is the greatest, I think it's like the greatest piece of love, or it's the greatest evidence of love. And something about that just doesn't quite feel right, or something about that makes me kind of question that. And as many people here are, I'm fairly social justice minded. And sometimes when working with students or clients, I engage in discussions regarding victimization and perpetration. And of course, those terms seem like very heavy terms because I think we associate them with sexual assault. But we can even use those terms of victimization and perpetration if we're talking about emotional manipulation, if we're talking about physical abandonment, or just as simple as someone jumping in the line in the grocery store, someone yelling at you because of a mistake that they made. There is the perpetrator, and there is the person who has been wrong. So for me, it doesn't quite feel right to tell the victim or the person that has been hurt that something is wrong with your heart because you can't forgive something that someone else has either done to you or that you have done to them, because it feels like we're just victimizing them even more so. Now, don't get me wrong, ultimately, I think to hold on too tightly, keywords here is too tightly, to times that you've been hurt or wronged is ultimately hurtful to the person, is ultimately hurtful to the self. However, I certainly don't feel like it's my place to tell someone that their hurts has gone on for too long, that there is some deficit within their heart which prevents them from forgiving, and that they need to just let it go. Because like I said earlier, I'm one of those people that tends to believe there's usually a deeper meaning. And so in those instances, if a person is holding on to these past hurts, If a person can't let it go, if a person can't forgive, there is likely an important reason that needs to be understood, which even perhaps that person doesn't even understand that reason. And so if I think about forgiveness, there is this other piece to this. And this is that sometimes when talking about forgiveness, we are talking about the need to forgive someone else for when they have wronged us. But also in life, sometimes forgiveness is about forgiving ourselves when we have hurt others, or forgiving ourselves when we have made choices that have hurt ourselves. So ultimately, this idea of forgive and forget has always seemed like kind of an impossible feat for me. And forgiveness, yes, I definitely think that forgiveness is possible. Forget, that's where I get very literal. And for me, when I hear this idea of forget, that seems like the impossible feat. Because to me, that suggests the person would not have any recollection of what has happened. But regardless of if we are talking about when someone has hurt us, or we have hurt others, or we have hurt ourselves, we remember those instances. We may replay them in our mind. We think about what we could have said and what we should have done. And so if I go back to the Grey's Anatomy episode, the character of Callie stated something that she forgave her husband because that is what is expected. My client felt that if she didn't forgive, there was something wrong with her heart. And ultimately, I guess where I'm at is that I forgive not because the Bible tells me so, not because there's something superior or inferior about my heart, but that I forgive because I accept that people hurt people. People hurt us. We hurt people. We hurt ourselves. Sometimes that hurt is intentional, and sometimes the hurt is unintentional, and sometimes the consequences are horrific. Sometimes the consequences are benign, and sometimes the consequences are just this nebulous and unclear feeling that we carry around with us. And if someone hasn't forgiven, maybe it's because they're still trying to make sense of what has happened and still trying to gain some acceptance of it. And I think we also have to be real here that we live in a world in which sometimes really horrible things happen. Children die. People get diseases, gunmen walk into crowds, planes crash, people go for a walk outside and are accidentally hit by a car, parents molest and abuse their children, and people in power sometimes exploit and abuse the trust of those around them. So I think it's important to remember that sometimes people who we think need to forgive, need to let it go, are needing to make sense of some really challenging life experiences. So where does this leave us with forgiveness? What is it that I'm trying to say here? What might forgiveness look like? And if I step back, I've realized that forgiveness never made sense to me because the definitions and assumptions that I was taught to believe about what forgiveness was and what it wasn't never seemed realistic to me, and they never made sense to me. However, when I've reread this, and this is just kind of through these last couple of weeks, rereading these words, these final words again, which is, the mother watches the back of his knees, bending in the way of little children, and she begins once more. How many times must a mother do this? Begins to work out how old I would be now. But this time will be the last. This time, before your mind can calculate the answer, it will wander away down the street with the child dancing to the African music that has gone away and come home changed. The wooden animal in your pocket will soothe your fingers, which are simply looking for something to touch, mother. Mother, you can still hold on, but forgive. Forgive and give for long as we both shall live. I forgive you. The teeth at your bones are your own. The hunger is yours. Forgiveness is yours. The sins of the fathers belong to you and to the forest and even to the ones in iron bracelets. And here you stand remembering their songs. Listen, Slide the weight from your shoulders and move forward. You are afraid you might forget, but you never will. You will forgive and remember. Move on, walk forward into the light. And I guess what I finally realized about those words is that why I kept going back to them all of these years is because that is a definition of forgiveness that makes sense to me. Maybe forgiveness is not about completely forgetting, but recognizing that forgiveness maybe only comes when we truly acknowledged what happened. The mother felt responsible for the death of her daughter. She truly acknowledged that. And perhaps forgiveness comes from when we acknowledge that and we accept the consequences of the actions, even though we may not like them. And like the mother in the book, we recognize that at times, even though we have forgiven, there still may be moments in which we feel some anger, in which we feel some loss, in which we feel some sadness. But that after forgiveness, instead of holding on to these hurts every day of our lives to punish ourselves or to punish the person that has hurt us, we recognize that our lives may be different, that we might be changed, our relationship with other people may not be the same, and we may not like what has happened, and we may not like what has happened, we may not like these changes, but we fumble towards making sense of them and gradually slide the weight of them from our shoulders and slowly but surely choose to decide to move forward. And that are my thoughts about forgiveness. 205, I realized that halfway through. Happened last week too, then, yes. 205, Amazing Grace. Please rise if you are able. Benediction? Okay. I have another book. Today I was just pulling off books from my bookshelf. Another book, and I guess before I share these, the benediction, some of you know this, but this week I closed on a house and packed and moved, And then yesterday was like, oh my gosh, I have to sit down and write these words quick. But what I wanted to say is that I have moved to St. Louis, and so I will be, of course, this is probably one of my last Sundays that I will be attending here as a regular member. I know some of you are from St. Louis and you make that drive, but it's like all the years that I've been here, I've lived a block and a half, and sometimes I barely make it here on time. No, and so that during, like I said earlier, I started attending 4 years ago in August, became a member. I have so appreciated what this church has offered me. I know many of you have seen that I usually sat towards the back, and then when church was done, I would quickly exit. Because usually on the weekends, I just want some place to just kind of come, kind of debrief, and then go back out into the world. And so I want to thank you for offering that for me for the last 4 years. There are things I will miss, and this is definitely one of the things I will miss about living in this town. Okay. Now, in terms of our benediction, this is another book. A friend gave this to me. She found it at a used book sale. And this is called Between a Rock and a Hard Place. And it was actually written by Aaron Ralstein. And for those of you not familiar with who Aaron Ralstein is, he was 27 at the time when he got caught in that canyon and needed to amputate his own arm. And there's a really good movie, it's kind of horrific to watch, 127 Hours, that just came out a couple months ago. And that movie was about his life. And so this was another book that I read, and the last paragraph always stuck with me and was something that I pulled, and I thought it was appropriate words for our benediction. And so Aaron writes that, "For all that has happened and the opportunities still developing in my life, I feel blessed. I was part of a miracle that has touched a great number of people in the world, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. My accident in and rescue from Blue John Canyon were the most beautifully spiritual experiences of my life. And knowing that, were I to travel back in time, I would still say, see you later to Megan and Christy and take off into that lower canyon by myself. While I have learned much, I have no regrets about that choice. Indeed, it has affirmed my belief that our purpose as spiritual beings is to follow our bliss, seek our passions, and live our lives as inspirations to each other. Everything else flows from that. When we find inspiration, we need to take actions for ourselves and for our communities, even if it means making a hard choice or cutting out something and leaving it in your past. Saying farewell is also a bold and powerful beginning." So ends our service, and I believe we have a postlude.